Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. Welcome to the Sunday morning, buddy. Man, we got a lot of stuff to jump into. NBA, some eyebrow-raising stuff, epic matchup last night between, well, we'll get into all of that, man. 90 minutes, y'all are locked and loaded here in the kitchen, man. We got a whole bunch of dishes to jump into all across the board. And I'm kind of, you know, upset. I'm feeling some type of way because the month of March is almost over already. I mean, it's almost over already, and the month of March has done nothing short but been mad up until this point. I done took off his blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. Sports City, welcome to the Sunday morning brunch.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning.
It's a Sports City chef with Sunday the brunch with Lark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Lark, the Moses, and TP Timeless.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, and 2 hours with facts. That's a fact, yeah.
Your call-in number is 917-889-9592. Like I said, you got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with the chef. We are starting to see at least partial of these brackets situate for the Sweet 16. That's right. We already have 8 teams in play. We have to see 8 teams as of today, seeing who will be ready for the Sweet 16. And I can't lie. Everything that we've seen in the past couple of days within this Sweet 16, I'm not going to lie. I have two brackets that I have, right? Two brackets. It's personal. I'm going to let you know. I got two brackets going on. I don't want to do five and see if one could get. I wanted two, and that's it. One of them is completely out of there. I haven't been here since Thursday. And the one that's completely out of there, that's the Michigan State one. I have Michigan State getting to the final and winning. Middle Tennessee said, no. We are going to disrupt that. As much as we're going to get people in here to talk about these matters, definitely would love to talk about this one as well. The other game or the other bracket that I have, the team is still alive. That's all I'm going to say. I don't even want to give up the name because I feel like karma follows me around. So I'm not giving up the name by any means. The team is still alive, doing what they need to do to keep on dancing. Okay, first and foremost, before I start jumping into a lot of the college basketball and things of that nature, especially in the big dance, I want to get into the epic matchup that happened last night where the Golden State Warriors visited the San Antonio Spurs. Now, here goes an interesting perspective or view that I look at within this matchup, right? The Warriors are playing the best basketball that we've ever seen. And I still think that they may end up having the best record of all time. I'm not going to lie. I think when it's all said and done, when the 82 games are done, I don't think that they lose 4 games to make this 71-11. You know, like I think they're going to do 72-10 or 73-9. Like I think the worst that they can do is tie it. No team out there is strong enough outside of the San Antonio Spurs or somebody upper echelon teams at this point in time in the season. I don't think they have the ground to sit up here and lose games to guys that are under 500 or go on the road and start playing questionable basketball. But here goes an interesting standpoint that I took away from what happened yesterday. Now, the first time that these two teams met, they were in the Oracle, and of course, they're both of these teams, of which both unbeaten at home. Golden State has not lost in Oakland at the Oracle. The Spurs have not lost at home in the AT&T Center down there in San Antonio. Now, I knew that this would be a tough game for the Warriors to go in there and win. I didn't know how long this streak has been going on. This streak has been going on for quite some time for them to try and eclipse losing down there in Texas. They are on a 33-game losing streak, people. 33 games. This goes back as far as me being in high school. Since 19, February 14th, Valentine's Day of 1997, was the last time Golden State has gone into San Antonio and beaten the Spurs. The last time that this happened, Tim Duncan was in college. Ever since Tim Duncan has gotten in the league, Golden State has not beaten them down there in Texas. This is almost like they're batting 1,000. Now, here goes another situation. They'll probably go down there and play them again, because they do play them again in San Antonio again, and they'll probably win that game and eclipse this streak. But this streak is enormous. Now, there's several different things that I'm looking at within the realm of how this goes down, right? They just played this game, a month or two ago, and they beat the Spurs by 30 points. Now, enter Saturday, and the final score was 87-79, everybody knows. I think this is a great defensive battle for the matter of the matchup. Interesting enough, this is what intrigues me in this matchup. And I'll finish up on this game, and then I'll get to people that I have a queue, or a chef that I have a queue. But here we go. So, Stephen Curry, which I'll take this with a grain of salt, because it's just a game. It's just one game. So I'm not even like, oh, we need to worry about it, but oh, I will be talking about it, though. He was 1-for-12 from three. And the three that he hit, he was basically in front of Greg Popovich, one of those miraculous three shots, and LaMarcus Aldridge was in his face. And literally, I could say that shot looked like a prayer. It wasn't like a shot that he felt comfortable shooting. He hit it. But he was 1-for-12 from three. He scored 14 points. I think this is probably his lowest output in a given effort where he actually played a good amount of the game. I think this is probably the lowest scoring output that the Warriors put together altogether. They scored 79 points in a four-quarter game where this offense has been clicking. Now, there's many different ways that we could look at this scenario. Everybody probably wasn't on their game. You got Klay Thompson that put up 15 points. I actually want to dig into him, too, because a lot of people love the Splash Brothers stuff. And, of course, he can hit shots, right? But all the attention is on Steph Curry. Is Steph Curry this, Steph Curry that? Steph Curry's been a madness, putting up a lot of offense. Everybody else been kind of, you know, playing their role and putting together a lot of storm. But it's like, where is Klay? Like, Klay will put up a 27-point night, have a 30-point game, and then he'll fall asleep. And nobody looks at what's going on. But they actually came up with a great game plan. And if they kind of force Steph to stay back there with a hand in his face, I think it makes it tougher, even though he makes tough shots. So I can't really call Steph out too much. But Steph comes out with a post saying, this is the best game that I ever played, and this is why it is scary, because a game which you actually slow this guy up is in a situation where he's going to be ready the next time he comes at the Spurs, or another team that tries to come up with the same game plan that watched the video up against this Golden State team. But for them to have 79 points, for Steph to have 14, in which the remainder of the team scored, what, 65 points, this is questionable. And I think a lot of people need to follow this blueprint as best as they can to make it tougher on Steph and make other players beat you. This is where I get into an interesting debate with other people out there saying, oh, he's the best point guard in the game. He's an MVP. I give him the MVP because if he wasn't playing like this, I don't think that they would have this type of, standings in the record book here. But, I guess once he gets the ball out of his hands, if he's knocking down shots, they look to other people to make plays. If they're not hot, that team is right back to the one of the sharp teams in the Western Conference. I don't think that they're sitting on top of the NBA, if you will. But I think they actually meet up two more times, one more time in the Oracle, one more time down there in Texas as well. And I had to get to this, especially while they were able to stick to their guns, not give up the game plan too much, make sure they made Curry see bodies a lot. And I was actually saying this myself, and a guy that actually lives out here in Connecticut, an NBA legend in Calvin Murphy, said, I don't understand how these guys keep leaving him or stepping away from him. You got to stay on his body if he's hitting shots. And when you watch Steph Curry and when he's on fire, you either see him shooting wide open threes. I don't know how people leave him wide open. Or they step back off of him like he's going to beat him off the first step. I'd rather Steph Curry throw up a floater, a shot in the paint, or get a layup, then do what his father taught him and shoot jumpers. That's just me. I'd rather see him do something where he's doing physical activity instead of, you know, setting up for a jumper and doing what comes natural to him. But this is something that San Antonio focused on. They stuck to the script, and it worked. So, one, I'm looking at the capacity of Steph saying that this is the best game he ever played, because I can't wait to see how he comes out of the gate the next time that they play. And two, if San Antonio is up for the challenge to not only continue to play well up against the Golden State Warriors, but to remain able to do this throughout the remainder of the season, approaching the postseason, it's like Pop gets the best effort out of this team when they get to the doorstep of the playoffs. And we're at the basically the end of March. I can't even believe I'm saying that. We're at the end of March right now, like 11 days left. 11 days left. I do want to get that out the way. Get people in here calling in by way of Virginia. I have Mr. TB in the building. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm good. I'm actually really good. And you should know why, Ty. It's been a while since I've been here. I should be back on more often because the season for me is over. And my new season starts. Let's go, Kings. Let's shock the world. And then I can really brag on here to Mr. Hoya that didn't even make the NIT.
Okay, okay. First, they didn't take the invitation, and I don't blame them the way that they played ball. But this is one season. This is one season that Miami's playing well. Georgetown, I'm actually mad at Georgetown playing like this because Devontae Smith Rivera is probably one of the more dangerous players I've ever seen in college basketball. And they experienced a big injury this year. But nevertheless, I'm not going to make any excuses. I'm going to say this, and I hope people out here hear me when I say this. I haven't really said this on Sports City. I'm going to say it now, and I know it won't happen, but I'm going to say it. They got to get rid of John Thompson III. They got to get rid of him. It looks good, especially when you got like four pieces on the floor that can make shots or finish strong at the rim. That Princeton offense is not going to work for them to be an Elite Eight or Final Four team any longer. It worked when they had Jeff Green and Roy Hibbert, Jeremiah Rivers, you know, names that people know because they're NBA relevant. You know what I'm saying? But not anymore. If he's going to continue to run that system with the players that they have, he's got to go. As much as I respect John Thompson Jr., his father, it's not going to work. But nevertheless, like I said, I'm not going to sit up here and make excuses. They had an under 500 season with players that they should have been able to be successful with. But we'll get into college basketball. In fact, I can make that turnaround to college basketball if you want. I had two more topics that I wanted to talk about in the NBA before I got into college basketball. Did you want to say anything about that Spurs game before I get away from the Spurs matchup?
I didn't even watch it. I watched my Kings baseball game when we beat Louisville, going for the sweep tonight or today at 12:30.
Okay. One other NBA topic that I'm going to throw out there and see how you feel about this, even though you didn't watch the game, but I'm going to throw this out there to you. The Houston Rockets played the Atlanta Hawks, and the Atlanta Hawks actually took care of business and won this game pretty handily. Now, that's not even what I'm focused on right here, people. People, buckle up, man. Because this is basketball. But this is basketball. We're going to get into it, right? Now, they lost the matchup 109-97 in Atlanta. Dwight Howard's from Atlanta, too. But that, nevertheless, Dwight Howard gets caught in the middle of a basketball game using Stick'Em. This is basketball, people. Now, I know. They use it in well. They're not supposed to use it in any sport, but I know it was more used in football, and it actually drew a lot of questions toward me around Jerry Rice because Jerry Rice said he used it for a big portion of his NFL career, and I'm like, wow, the shorthand of Jerry Rice. This is what made your hand shorthanded, huh? Like you are the greatest receiver of all time. I can't even call Jerry the greatest player of all time. I have my own opinion and debate. Would love to throw that around here in the kitchen. Get it hot in the kitchen if we want. But I feel a certain way about this now. But him using Stick'Em, Jerry Rice's, you know, career has been over, I think, since 2004, 2005, when he wrapped it up with the Denver Broncos. But nevertheless, Dwight Howard and I don't know if you've seen the situation, right? Dwight Howard comes off of the bench after using the Stick'Em stuff, right? Because he has a can that's sitting on the scores table. He must have put it on his hands, but they don't actually see the footage of him putting it on his hands. He comes into the game. He gets underneath the basket because it's during a free throw. He asks the ref to touch the ball. He gets the ball as the ref gives the ball to Paul Millsap. Paul Millsap, you know, sets up to shoot the free throw. He touches the area where Dwight touches. He feels the Stick'Em and throws the ball back to the ref like, what's on the ball? What just happened? The refs actually see and touch the Stick'Em and get the ball out of the game. You actually see Coach Bickerstaff go grab the Stick'Em off of the table and take it to the Houston sideline, trying to do it unknowingly like everybody doesn't see him. Now, I want to see how the league comes down on this, if they do come down on this, and if Dwight Howard serves any suspension for trying to cheat. You know, I don't even know if this is a cheating edge because I don't want the ball to stick in my hand. Like, especially you being a big guy and you're trying to shoot better free throws if you don't shoot the free throw well. But your thoughts on Dwight Howard using Stick'Em in a basketball game?
This is the first time I've heard of this. This is funny. I mean, what happens if they go throw the ball to him and the ball just sticks to his hand when he goes to shoot? Or, I mean, that's just hilarious. I mean, wow. You caught me off guard on this one. You almost kept me speechless. I have never heard this before. I've heard it for football. I mean, even the new gloves, if you've ever tried the new gloves that a lot of these companies are coming out with, they've got a little sticky to them. I mean, I've tried them on. I've got a pair of the University of Miami gloves that Adidas came out with. And they've got a little Stick'Em to them to where the ball hold, literally, it won't, like, stick to the gloves for good, but it helps catch it. But for basketball, this just blows my mind. I mean, wow. Where do I go?
I'm looking at it like this. Is he trying to get a rebounding edge or – is Harden throwing crazy passes, or if he's setting up to catch alley-oops that are, he already jumps out of the gym. Not too many people that could jump with him when they throw an alley-oop. So is he going up too high and it's going to be at his fingertips and he's trying to come down with it and bang on guys? I mean, I don't know what Dwight Howard is doing, but now he throws out a statement. Now, this is the funny part. I don't know why. This is the statement he says. I don't know why everybody tripping. You don't know why everybody's tripping. Like, you're cheating. It got caught. Literally. Like, okay, so now what? Every big man that doesn't have coordination or every big man that can't catch the ball, should you Stick'Em in basketball? I never even heard of this. Like, you see LeBron, you see KD, you see Steph Curry, all of them go get the powder, and basically keep their hands dry because they want that ball out of their hands. They don't want to have it stuck in their hands. What in the world was Dwight thinking? Like, I can't believe it. And listen to the scoring output put for the Rockets. Their second quarter was the best quarter that they had, and they put up damn near 50 points in the second quarter. Almost everything outside of that, they put up team numbers, 16 in the first, 14 in the fourth. They put up 25 in the third, but after a 42-point scoring effort in the second quarter, there are issues that are still here with this Houston Rockets team that I'm not comfortable with them moving forward in this Western Conference playoff situation. Now, more than likely, they're going to be either an 8th or 7th seed unless they get hot, and I can't really put it past them because there's 11 days left in March. They have about 15 days left in April. They can actually make up ground and get higher. But more than likely, they'll end up playing either Golden State or San Antonio. The way that they're playing ball right now – like I said, I don't see their matchup against whoever they're playing going past the five-game series. I don't even want to say you're going to get swept out. I mean, I feel like I should say that, but I don't want to put them in that type of situation because they'll be in Houston. I feel like they'll get a game or two. They'll get a game or two. But if they get two, then I'm wrong here by saying that this is a five-game series. But not the way that they're playing ball. I think this is definitely a total wreck after Kevin McHale walked out of the door. And they're lucky to be playoff relevant. One thing that I look at, too, that they're loaded at the small forward position. They brought in Michael Beasley. They got Michael Beasley out of China. after his little stint in the NBA and having so many different things come off his shoulders, he went to China and was one of the best players out there in China. They brought him here while they have Corey Brewer and they have Josh Smith. And you got Michael Beasley. Like, what are they trying to – I just don't get it with the Houston Rockets, but this is crazy that let alone everything that's going on with the Houston Rockets, Dwight Howard on top of this. Anything else on top of that before I get away from it?
The only thing I can think of why he would do this, and you brought up the chalk thing that LeBron and him use, so that might throw this out, is he sweats really bad.
Right.
But, I mean, the last time, I mean, maybe it's to help his hands and help him be able to grab the ball and all. But then the ball's going to be sticky. And so,
right.
I mean, in a way, you're hurting your own teammates with the sticky stick'em shit on there. So, I mean, I don't understand it. What, I've never heard of this for freaking basketball. Never.
Me either.
Baseball for pitchers to use stuff to help them grip the ball and be able to break the ball better and everything else. But for basketball, I've never heard of this.
In basketball, you want the ball out of your hand. You don't want it in your hand. And then it looks like it's sticking to your hands while you're trying to make a pass or something. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Dwight Howard has a lot of issues down there in Houston. This right here is another, like, deciding factor, I can say. I don't want to say nail in the coffin, but I say deciding factor why he wants out of Houston. I really feel like he is not comfortable down there. He's going to be on another roster next year. I truly do. I truly do. It's starting to be evident that he has a gripe or a beef with James Harden, probably not liking the system or the pieces that he's down there with. They've already had players come out and speak toward saying, well, you know, when Dwight's on the floor with James Harden, you can see it's a rift, but when Dwight is off the floor, James Harden plays better ball, he's getting everybody involved. So, I mean, it's something that we're going to have to watch closely as we move forward. I'll get away from terrorizing Dwight and the Rockets. I don't really feel like I'm terrorizing. I'm just speaking the truth. I really do. Now, I'm going into my kitchen for real, even though I'm in the kitchen right now. But the Oklahoma City Thunder on a road trip had three games in a matter of 4 days. Wednesday, they had a game. They were off Thursday night. Friday and Saturday, they played. In which it was a three-game stretch on the road. They won all three. In those games, Russell Westbrook, triple-doubles in each of them. Now, here goes the crazy part about Russell's triple-doubles. As a back-to-back situation, Friday and Saturday, now Friday, I know a lot of people will be like, well, look who he played. They played the Sixers. Okay, I'll give you that. He still got a triple-double. He had to do what he needed to do. They went into Indiana up against a playoff-caliber team. Ended up getting the win. They still ended up letting Paul George go off for 45 points. But here goes another interesting conversation that Russell puts himself in. Now, a few weeks ago, Russell actually had a 25, 20, and 11 game with his triple-double. Now, with this triple-double right here, he's eclipsed his 14th triple-double, the most in an NBA season since 1988 and 89 with Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson did it. This is a 27-year run since people have seen this. This guy is playing excellent ball. Even though he had an off-night shooting the ball, your thoughts on him putting these triple-doubles together while they are still underneath the Spurs and the Warriors, and he's playing excellent ball, and just like I said earlier, it more or less is going to be Steph Curry's MVP trophy. But this guy is putting up MVP effort night in, night out. And Kevin Durant also had a 30-10 rebound game in the motion of this situation to take care of business in Indiana. But your thoughts on a 27-year window of not seeing this type of basketball be played by Russell Westbrook?
I think he should be at least – personally, I'd give him the MVP if it was me. Take nothing away from what Steph's done.
to average these triple doubles like Westbrook's doing is crazy. I mean, that's just me. I mean, yes, he's got KD and he's got this, he's got that, but personally, I think Westbrook should be the MVP. And you know my feelings, I mean.
Right, because I know how you feel about him. So it's interesting that I actually asked somebody that actually feels opposite the way that I feel about Russ. Now, here goes something crazy, right? Because the makeup of Russell Westbrook, let's go to the evolution of Russell Westbrook to what he is. He comes out of UCLA, a shooting guard, comes into the league, and they form a shooting guard into a point guard, and he goes through the ups and downs, turnover city, and then he actually gets called the ball hog, which I can see where people allude to that. Now, he's on the team. Let's be honest. Let me be clearly honest. I'm a diehard Thunder fan, so I can't even be biased in this situation. I can't. This team is not loaded with studs, like guys that he could continually go to and get the ball to and get scores from these guys. Everybody still looks at this Thunder team as this being Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, question mark. Even though I'm a big Enes Kanter fan, Enes Kanter is playing excellent basketball for these guys. They're starting to get a little consistency out of Kyle Singler. I said if he can continue to start knocking down shots, he can continue to start being an impact player. I don't even want to call him a threat, but I think he could be an impact guy. They have guys here, Steven Adams and Andre Roberson. I don't know what you're going to get for these guys game in and game out, but they are a part of the roster. But he's still averaging double-digit assists, and it's not like he's getting every one of those passes to Kevin Durant. If him and Kevin Durant played two-man ball, I don't think they would be successful. Even though the stats look like they end up playing two-man ball, but Russ is getting this ball to everybody. Everybody sees a piece of the cake while Russell has the ball on the floor. For him to get this done, and I know the way that the voters for the MVP, I think they go by, you know, what has the fans going crazy. Everybody that love now with Steph shooting from everywhere, and I don't take anything away from it because me getting older, like when I was younger, I used to love seeing paint play, and, you know, people go down there, bang, and dunk on dudes or, you know, scoring people face down there. Now it's like, man, I got older, I respect the jump shot. Like, you can live another day by sitting outside shooting jumpers. But, you know, as we seen last night on how the Spurs are actually able to corral Steph, you look at a situation where Russ is able to still attack, still out there playing that type of basketball. If he gets one more triple-double, this is probably the highest triple-double total in season that people have ever seen. So, outside of the Big O. And we're talking 40-plus years of basketball. I wasn't even on Earth. Like I wasn't even on Earth when Oscar Robertson was playing basketball. So this is something that people, you know, I know a lot of people, including you, don't like Russell Westbrook, but what he's able to go out there and do, perform at this type of rate, scoring over 20 points, putting up 10 or more assists, and this is by average, he's averaging over 10 assists, and the best rebounding point guard in the game, well, no, not even point guard, let me say that the right way, the best rebounding guard in the game. He averages more rebounds a game than, I hope you guys are ready for this one, LeBron James. He averages more rebounds a game than LeBron. And LeBron is 6'8", and they list him, and they list LeBron at 260. LeBron is 270, though. I mean, he don't look like he's 270 because he's cut up, jacked, and moved like a damn deer, but he's down there doing everything. But I had to get that one out of the way. And you know, I'm kind of nervous talking about my team because I feel like I talked them into a doggone brick wall and something bad will end up happening. But with 14, for him to have his 14th triple-double, for him to do it on back-to-back games, you would think this guy is tired. You would think Russ is tired, and he's still able to give you a triple-double effort. I have. Okay, anything else before I get away from Russell Westbrook?
He's got more triple-doubles than Magic's got, right?
No, Magic kills him in career triple-double numbers. Career triple-double numbers, Magic has over 100.
All right, never mind that.
Okay. It's fine. Okay, so Sports City, it's about time for me to jump into it. the NCAA tournament and how everything is going down. Now, like I said, I haven't been here since Thursday, since the Crossover Cafe ended. Friday's situation went down. Sunday, running around, I couldn't get back in the kitchen. So I have to save a lot of the meat and potatoes for here during the brunch. Now, I don't know how to start this one off, but I'm going to do it like this, okay, Sports City? You have a situation where, like I started the show off, one of my brackets is completely busted, like completely busted. Like, I look at it and I'm pissed off now. Like, what could have happened between Middle Tennessee State and Michigan State? The one bracket that I had Michigan State advancing, getting to the finals. Forget the Final Four, but getting to the national championship game and winning it. These guys lose out of the gate. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, this is really happening. And just look at how you got to be prepared for these teams that are up and ready to match up against these guys. Middle Tennessee State actually plays Syracuse today. If they are able to come up with a big time, and I wouldn't even really call this an upset because Syracuse hasn't been playing great basketball. A lot of people question on them being in the tournament right now with the way that they started out the season. But if Middle Tennessee State could actually use that adrenaline from that game that they beat Michigan State going up against Syracuse, this would all be too fitting of another Cinderella and an interesting story, kind of like the George Mason back in the days or VCU on their run or teams of that nature. Tommy, your thoughts on Middle Tennessee State, ready for the ballroom, if you will, of this dance called the Cinderella Walk, basically. Your thoughts?
You won't believe me, and probably nobody on Sports City will believe me. I actually take Middle Tennessee to beat Michigan State. And this is why. They were more athletic, and they shoot the heck out of the ball. And that's what scares me against Syracuse. And, yeah, I'm rooting for Syracuse because they're an ACC team. It'd be nice to get all – well, it won't get all because Pittsburgh blew it. They're the only team in the ACC that lost. But that scares me because this Middle Tennessee team can shoot the heck out of the ball. If they're hot, watch out because Middle Tennessee lives and dies by that three. Yeah, they got that Upshaw Jr. that can get to the basket and is very athletic. I mean, they could make a deep run in this tournament.
They have to get past Syracuse. This is the deal. They have to take care
of
the Orange.
Yeah, but see, the thing with Syracuse is they're a very inconsistent team this year. Very inconsistent team. It's like 1 minute they can make everything in the gym. They throw off and it goes in. Then there's days where they look like they're not interested in even playing and throwing up nothing but bricks, not moving on that zone. Now, I'll say this. Syracuse is playing a lot better since Jim's come back.
Right.
That wasn't Syracuse when – and that's why I'm glad my Canes played them when they did. But we played them without Jim. When they come back with Jim, they went on that long winning streak before they disappointingly lost, five out of four games at the end of the season.
Right. And just like I threw out there a situation that Georgetown actually beat Syracuse. Georgetown beat them without Jim Boeheim too. But still, yeah, I think that people still look at, just like you said, that zone, that 2-3 zone that everybody knows Syracuse comes at you with. They extended it, forced people to take bad shots. They rebound the ball. They're supposedly rebounding the ball out of it, which they haven't rebounded like they have in past years. Syracuse could actually set themselves up to be in the Sweet 16 situation if they play the correct basketball, because this is a team that they should be able to knock off. But with them having that nothing to lose attitude going into this game, I don't see too much wrong that they could put toward this matchup. But Middle Tennessee, for me, I, of course, like I said, I had Michigan State winning that game. I have to Middle Tennessee State because it's always those type of teams. And I have more of my sleeve, too. I have more teams to jump into. This is not the only one. But like I said, I got a ton of dishes here in this damn bracket. That's for sure. We do have Mr. Silver here. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling what I'm feeling.
Wow. That helps me. That helps me. Okay, so your thoughts out of the gate, at least on this matchup with Michigan State losing first round to Middle Tennessee State.
You know, obviously, I didn't. I wish I would have had the wherewithal Tommy's got, but I didn't pick Middle Tennessee to win. As much as I gave him a chance, I just there was somebody I was either it was on Twitter or somewhere when Serena lost to the unknown. I still don't even know her name. Earlier this year, it was something where I didn't believe it. Looking like it was going to happen, she's winning, and the same thing with Middle Tennessee. It was looking like it was going to happen. They were winning. I just didn't believe it, and there was nothing that could make me believe it until the game was over. It was something that I did not expect at all whatsoever in any way, shape, or form. So to have Middle Tennessee shoot the way they shot, make the free throws they made, and just keep Michigan State from doing anything really, well. I mean, they didn't play very poorly. I mean, this isn't a game in which I felt that Middle Tennessee came in and Michigan State didn't play at all. Where they were, down and out, and they just didn't look like they were into it. This is a game that Michigan State was into it. They were trying really hard, and it wasn't as if, like I said, it was a game where Michigan State just wet the bed, and Middle Tennessee took advantage. This is a game that Middle Tennessee won, by their own talents and schemes and what they brought to the table. So, to me, it was a pretty big surprise. Obviously, it was a bracket buster for most of my brackets. But in watching the game, you're sitting there going, "I see it happening. I can envision. I can see Middle Tennessee winning, but I'm not going to believe it until the game was over." I just had that feeling. You just never know. But with those two teams, not those two in particular, but with those two seeds of teams, the twos and the 15s. It's hard to sit there and say that I would have really, really thought Middle Tennessee was going to win, because honestly I didn't. But it was a great game to watch. Just like the couple other, I think we had this 13 and a 14. I think it was Hawaii and one other team with SF Austin. Along with those, it was.
Get out of there. You always do that. One at a time.
No, I was saying, you just those things in general, you just, sometimes. But with this game, it was just something I didn't believe. I wasn't going to believe it until the game was over. I couldn't force myself to say Middle Tennessee was going to win at any point until there was 4-0s and the refs had declared the game over.
Okay. Anything else around this game? Because I already see that Nacho is making a push. He sounded like he wasn't ready, but he's ready. Okay, so he's ready for it. So he needs to just get his little coffee or some water, and he'll be fine in his damn kitchen, as you can see. Anything else, Tommy, that you have before I get away from this one game? Because I got a lot. I have a lot to look at.
Yeah, watch out for that. I think his name's Potters, the boy that led the NCAA in three-point shots made. For Middle Tennessee, I can't remember the number. Dude is a baller. We actually have a mutual friend on Facebook that coached against him, Ty. He told me before the game, watch out for him.
That means I have to go investigate.
Okay, I'll watch it. I'm literally watching the game on my phone at my daughter's school, waiting for her to come home, get out from school.
Okay. Well, I will be talking to you after the show to investigate more into this. See, I got people that I'm in touch with and sync with and don't even know what they've done in their timeline of career. But, okay, so Sports City. I think that, it's only right that I get to do this, right? I must say, if Tommy already jumped out the gate and gave you his, at least Tommy gets to do it, right? But I get to do it, too. I get to do it, right? Okay. Texas versus Northern Iowa, right? I'm up here like, you know what? Texas may have beaten North Carolina, but Northern Iowa has been playing good ball this year. I am going to pick NIU to take care of business up against Texas. I picked them on my bracket. I can post it on wherever you want me to post it, Twitter, Facebook, which I can text you and send it to you. Right? Now, this is interesting stuff because I'm watching this full game because, you know, I'm flipping through game after game, just going through the March frenzy because I love this sport. I love this sport. I love it. So I'm flipping back and forth. But I'm watching how this is coming down to the wire, how it really don't look like Northern Iowa is going to make it. So I'm like, damn, I really picked them to beat Texas. And Texas is going to pull this one out. They ended up getting the lead, 72-70. They get down court. Taylor scores off of the miss and puts it back. Ties the score up. 2.7 seconds left on the clock. The inbound is looking for somebody to get the ball to. He looks at the point guard, doesn't give him the ball. He looks at the guy that's on the sideline and Jefferson, something like that. I forget how to say the guy's name. But he basically takes a mean right dribble and cross back left to make everybody think that he was going toward the sideline, cuts to the middle of the court and takes the half-court shot that you would want to take at that given time. The buzzer sounds. Bank shot off the box. 75-72, Northern Iowa. Now, here goes TP Timeless at the time of this shot. I'm watching the game, right? I'm watching the game, see it tied up. I'm like, damn, I don't know if I can do overtime. I don't want to see it. Now, this is all out of pass coming in. He made the shot. Like, he threw the shot up, and it hit. I just put both of my hands on my head and did not say a word. I would usually say, oh, my goodness. I would say, geesh. Oh, my God. I would say something. I just stood up. I was sitting up, so I just stood up, put both of my hands on my head, and I can just imagine the rest of the world, right? So then they start putting the camera on all the Texas fans, right? Tell me why all the Texas people had the same look that I had, stunned. Like they can't believe what they just saw. You talk about ripping somebody's heart out of their chest. Oh, my goodness. I guess this is the shot heard around the world. Now, this is similar to the Steph Curry situation that happened up against OKC a few weeks ago where he hit the shot, you know, about a step or two after half court, and there still was time on the clock. There was no time on the clock. This was a complete buzzer beater, and this is postseason implication. I want to see if you guys, how you guys saw when you guys seen the shot, if I'm overselling this madness. But this is what we call March Madness. Nacho, I'll come to you first.
Exactly. This is quintessentially what we call March Madness. This, you know, the story that you so put out there was pretty much the same thing here. You know, just a group of guys sitting there watching the game, and of course you got that one guy who's always the believer. You know, what if they hit a half court? You know, what if they hit a full court? What if they get a long pass and they do a Leitner and get a good turnaround? You know, there's always someone that says that. But this time there really wasn't. Everyone in the house was thinking overtime. Nobody thought anything was going to really come of it. You know, not discounting Northern Iowa, just something we didn't think that was going to happen. We just thought, you know, we go to overtime, we'll watch a good overtime game, and we'll see what happens. So I think the shock and the awe was something that was probably around the country, considering we haven't had any buzzer beaters. Yet we've had some close games and some teams fall, but no buzzer beaters like we're used to seeing, knockout, drag out, you know, drop the remote and walk out the room type of things that you can't explain. So I think this being the only one and this being as big as it was, where, like you said, it was 2.7 seconds. He gets the ball. He looks like he's going to run down the right. The if you're looking at it from the TV angle, the opposite court, the opposite base or the opposite side of the court, running down the court there, and then probably take a three or something. Like you said, he crosses back over. He has a wide open three, a wide open half court, and he just lets it fly. Bank shot, game over. It's just so so unexpected. So to me, this game, I didn't call it when these type of games where I don't necessarily know Texas. to the full extent, or Northern Iowa to the full extent. When I go back and look at the brackets that I made, the majority of who I picked is who I really thought was going to win. Now, there was a couple brackets that I made where I picked Northern Iowa, but I don't think I picked them solely on the fact that they could beat them. And I think it was a miracle type of thing. So unexpected as it was for me to even try for it to be even 72 all going into overtime, I really thought Texas would win this game. So, yeah, just the shock and awe and you know, the things of that nature. But like I said, there was no one that I was with that can sit there and say that they felt, you know, like it was going to game over like it did, or even a long pass or something like that, because we all just thought overtime was coming. So I don't know, maybe if Texas thought, you know, the same thing, they're not going to be able to get a shot off or a good look, or, you know, especially since he was running to the right. So I don't know what Texas was doing, because they didn't look too hard-pressed to get to him. There was a guy who wasn't, like I said, if when you watch it again, there's a Texas player who's not too far from him. You know, again, hindsight's 20/20. You never know. You always have the looking back on it to say you could have done this, and obviously that would be the end-all be-all, but I do think that maybe if he's trying harder, maybe he doesn't think that there's no shot, and he actually charges him or is able to get in front of him, this might have been an overtime game. But, you know, it was a great game nonetheless. So it was a great shot to see, like you said, like the Steph thing. The problem was, if I'm not mistaken, Steph Curry's was a swish. This was a bank shot. So I know the purists will say, you know, this is more lucky than it was talent, but to me it was just a great shot and a great ending to a pretty good game.
Now, this is the reason why I picked NIU in this matchup. They beat Wichita State twice, and they beat North Carolina. They beat North Carolina. So this is a team that knows how to play up against a big team. You may be a giant. Texas may have about two or three big that is hard to stop, but hard. I think if your heart is involved in it, I don't think too many people can stop you. You got a shot if they throw the ball up in the sky. And I care less if it went swish or bank shot. He won the game, period. Period. And his name is Jesperson. I forgot a letter. It's Jesperson. He was 4-for-7 from three. That was the only shot that he hit. He was 4-for-8 for the day. He missed one underneath the perimeter. But all the shots he hit was threes, and the one that counted the most was the one that sent Texas back to Austin. Tommy, your thoughts on this matchup? How mad is the month of March, especially on that shot? They have a game today up against Texas A&M where I know that they've beaten big-time teams, but if they knock off Texas A&M, people can just throw their brackets straight in the garbage.
I was with you. I was happy because I picked Northern Iowa for one reason only. And Ty, you know it. Chandler knows it. Nacho knows it. I can't stand the Big 12, and I think it's an overrated conference. And it's been proven so far. The only teams I had winning in the Big 12 was, of course, Iowa State. I didn't like the matchups, Oklahoma and Texas, and Kansas. I actually got Kansas in the Elite Eight. Losing in the Elite Eight. But I was nervous because I thought maybe if it went to overtime, I was thinking, shit, Texas is going to come back and win this. Then the shot went up. Both arms went up in the air and said, yes, yes, yes. Northern Iowa's season ends today. A&M beats them. A&M is a very good, very good basketball team.
Like I said, it's the month of March. It's mad. Do not count them out. If they knock on Texas A&M, and don't forget Texas A&M is a Big 12 school.
They are SEC. A Big 12 school.
Oh, they're SEC now? Okay.
They've been SEC since Johnny Manziel was there.
Okay. Even if we look at it, because they made that switch, that's right. They made that switch. But even if we look at it like that, the SEC hasn't even been that hot. Because I have another game or a team that we can talk about in the SEC that a lot of people think that I was actually at a restaurant And one of the guys said that this team is going to win it all. Said that they were going to win it all. So the SEC hasn't even been playing good basketball. I mean, of course, everybody likes to call them the football conference of the United States. So, but basketball-wise, too, I'm not really high on the SEC either. But even still, I don't even count NIU out right now. They've already beaten North Carolina. They've beaten a bigger team than at Texas A&M. So I can't even put that past them. They have to throw the ball in the sky to me. Right now, I can count nobody out. Nobody safe. Not Notre Dame up against Stephen F. Austin. Stephen F. Austin could end up being a Sweet 16 team, people. Stephen F. Austin could end up being a Sweet 16 seed, a 14 seed team in the Sweet 16, people. Just know that, okay? I'm not gonna dwell on that too long. I got a lot more upsets. I have a lot more upsets going on when I haven't been here. You also have Arkansas Little Rock went up against Purdue. I'm not going to lie, people. I have Purdue getting as far as the Sweet 16. I have Purdue getting as far as the Sweet 16. Arkansas Little Rock did all that they could in that overtime game and wished they had a hell of a shot from the guard, Hagen, to push it to overtime. They were down three. He shot a shot basically 5 feet behind the three-point line, turning his body. He wasn't even set, like, facing the rim. It was basically a turnaround three. He knocked it down, pushed it to overtime. They took care of business up against Purdue, where they were outmatched. Like, I really think that Purdue had the edge and size on the board, and they had one of the seven-footers just sitting on the bench. That's the one thing that I questioned about Purdue. But Arkansas Little Rock ended up falling to Iowa State. Iowa State put the work to them as of yesterday. Iowa State ends up advancing as well, going up against UVA. I want to get a couple of these in here. Also, with me being here in the state of Connecticut, you know, my godson was hitting me up like, it's going crazy up here in New Haven. Yale beat Baylor. Baylor, in the post-conference, you know, situation they had with Torian Prince, how they talked about how they got out-rebounded, how he responded to the reporters. Excellent stuff. I mean, in the height of emotion of losing games, you ask these people or ask these players those type of questions, like really? Like, you really put them in that situation where they have to answer a senseless question is another one. But for Yale to come off and beat Baylor and for Arkansas Little Rock to knock off Purdue, even though Arkansas Little Rock is out, Yale also is out as well. They lost to Duke as well. They pushed Duke, too. They pushed Duke as much as possible, but it just, I guess, the Coach K edge, if you will. I'll throw that one at you guys. Tommy, I'll come at you first. Arkansas Little Rock and Yale, if you want to talk about both of them, you can.
Duke got lucky. Yes, I'm an ACC guy. Duke got lucky. They better been lucky. Yale had a big deficit to overcome. I really thought Yale was going to pull that out. I really did. And I'll say it now. Duke loses, I think they play this coming Thursday. Duke loses to whoever they play. Watch. They'll be the first ACC team out. Yale was a good ball club. And they just, I don't know what happened, why it started like it did. Hell, I'll even say it and I'll flip it. My Kings got lucky yesterday. We were very lucky we had that big lead and just ran out
of
time.
No. I'm getting to the upsets first. I'm getting to the surprises or the shocks of these, and then I'm going to get to the meat and potatoes of where we stand. But no. I can't take anything away from Miami. I can't, especially with them going up against Wichita State this season. We'll get there. Just hang on. I got your dish. Don't you worry. I won't put a lot on your plate. Nacho, your thoughts on these two teams? Hold on, Tommy. Do you want to talk about Arkansas Little Rock up against Purdue as well, or no?
Yeah, it does. Purdue, they had a good season, but it doesn't surprise me. Now, I did have Purdue winning that. I didn't think they'd beat Little, but
right.
Purdue. They, I mean, they're just another one of those teams that were up and down, and you didn't know which team was going to show up.
Okay, Nacho, your thoughts on these two games or two teams as a 12 seed in both of those brackets, in which Yale was able to take care of Baylor and Arkansas Little Rock actually fit into their little silhouette. Cinderella slipper. I can't even say it. I'm trying to speak fast. Cinderella slipper up against Purdue. Your thoughts on those two teams, but both of them actually exited as of yesterday as well.
Yeah, the Baylor situation in Yale, that was one that I really didn't see coming at all. I thought Baylor was going to be able to dominate that game. Obviously, like most of the country, I had Baylor winning, and I didn't see that. So that's something that, you know, when we talk about March Madness, again, that's another game that is quintessential to what this time of month or time of year is. So something I didn't foresee coming, and something that I just entirely thought that, you know, I was completely wrong. The Purdue Little Rock Arkansas game, pat your own back, however you feel about it. I'm sitting there at Purdue, and every time I did, in all the brackets and in the back of my mind, thinking, you know what, I'm going to be wrong on this. This is going to be a game that I feel Little Rock is going to win, and there was no, I don't know if it was a, I didn't have a whole bunch of reasonings why behind it. It just felt as something that, I thought Providence Purdue. I thought Purdue was going to be just flat, not come out and play the best game. They didn't look right to me towards the end of the year, so I didn't really have too much trust in them. But again, like Tommy, I still picked them, and it just didn't work out the way that I thought it was. So those two games definitely, they're just they weren't the shockers. No pun intended to the Wichita State, but they weren't the shockers that I expected them, or unexpected to me. It was just something that, you saw a team in both instances be able to take advantage of another team's misfortunes or whatever they were, and make good shots down the end and not turn over the ball. So to me, it was definitely two games that I didn't see, but it wasn't, the biggest upset in my book. But again, the seedings make them a pretty big upset.
Okay, and I'm with you. Looking at my bracket, just watching people put up those the Michael Jordan retirement when he got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And he shed in tears, and people putting that all over people's brackets. It's exactly how I felt watching Purdue lose that game. I'm like, man, Arkansas Little Rock came out here and knocked Elias off. And knowing how far I had Purdue getting, I had him at least getting to the Sweet 16, at least, on both of my brackets. And one, I had him Elite 8 before they actually seen a problem. But they got the problem at the first round as well. I got one more upset situation, but I don't really even want to look at this as an upset. I think that, the expectancy of where this team should have been tournament, and that is Kentucky, as of last night, losing to the Indiana Hoosiers. Now, this is something that I actually posted as soon as the game ended. I said, I know two words that John Calipari does not like, and that is Hoosier basketball. I still remember, three or four years ago, I was in the middle of Vegas, because y'all know, before my birthday, I go out to Vegas. So I'm in the middle of Vegas, and Kentucky's undefeated. They got Anthony Davis. Doesn't look like anybody's going to stop him. That roster is completely loaded. But Indiana had that perfect storm. They had to go up to Bloomington and play these guys in Indiana. And the Hoosiers knock them off with a late game three at the end of the game, winning off a buzzer beater three to knock off Kentucky. Here they go facing again Tom Crean and doggone Calipari going at it again. And Indiana, Yogi Ferrell, and all of these guys, Yogi Ferrell as well, going at it. and they take care of business up against Kentucky, in which Kentucky was actually trying to keep it interesting at the end of the game where they were knocking down shots, cutting into this lead, cutting into the lead. They ended up losing Tyler Ulis as well to foul trouble. He fouled out of the game, and I think that clearly put the seal on this thing. But Kentucky goes home in the second round, in which Calipari is about to lose a lot of his players, a part of his roster, in this upcoming NBA draft and people leaving early as well. I want to see how you guys feel about the Hoosiers knocking off the Wildcats. Tommy, I'll come to you first on this one.
I was actually shocked. I mean, I'm not shocked, but I am shocked. I actually had Kentucky in the Final Four to lose to Virginia. I actually had an all-ACC national championship game. But I'm not shocked because it's a rival. Well, it used to be, until the two coaches can't agree on where to play the game at. I think that's ridiculous. But that's just a whole new, that's a whole different conversation. This Indiana team could be dangerous. The way they play, they shouldn't beat North Carolina Saturday or Thursday, Friday, whenever it's played, but they could. North Carolina better come out and play because this Indiana team is good. Good. I was disappointed because, once again, it was one of the teams in my Final Four. I just literally ripped my bracket through it because I said, to hell with it. It's done. But I'm not shocked. Kentucky, you said they lose their players. They still come back next year and be one of the top teams because they've got one of the top recruiting classes again coming back. So, I mean, they'll be back right back on top and probably win, come compete with the SEC conference again.
Oh, and you know, a lot of recruits come back to him because I think they respect Coach Cal and what he does on a year-by-year basis, keep these guys notably in the perspective of the national attention, things of that nature. Nacho, your thoughts on Kentucky getting knocked off by Indiana? Indiana headed for the Sweet 16, and Kentucky season is over.
I felt with these four teams, and when I mean four teams, Indiana, Chattanooga, Kentucky, and Stony Brook, that this was going to play out the way it did. Those two teams in Kentucky and Indiana got a pretty good draw. They got some pretty easy teams to face in that first round. Dominated them, you know, thoroughly. And in the round of 32, I really did think that Indiana was going to win. That was because I didn't feel Kentucky, to be honest, really, you know, to me, deserved us to be in there. This is, again, you know, we already know how I feel about Kentucky and Duke. I thought that could have been a great NIT championship, but I didn't think they could be anywhere near these brackets. So, you know, for Kentucky,
really,
I thought the NIT was what they were going to be in, but again, their name got them into this round. And they got a lucky draw with Stony Brook and then had to face a good Indiana team that took them out. So I just think that these two teams in Indiana and Kentucky played out the way they were supposed to. You know, when it comes now, to me, this is going to be interesting because either one of those teams, whether it had been Kentucky or Indiana, I think aren't to the level that North Carolina is right now. So, it might have been a moot point for them anyways, having to face them, you know, in in the Sweet 16. So I just really I'm really interested to see what Indiana can do. But to me, again, I didn't feel Kentucky was good enough to be in this tournament. That's personal opinion and how I felt about them in general. So just, you know, getting to the round of 32 was all I had them getting. And it kind of, you know, went into the way I thought it was. But, you know, other than that, like Tommy said, anything else you want to do, you rip your brackets up because you and Tommy, it's the same thing. You know, it just happened every other matchup. But in these particular, you know, two matchups in the first round and around 32, I thought that it kind of felt, you know, it kind of felt easy just to, you know, chalk those. But it it felt easy, but again, Indiana just that it had it for me. I definitely was that. To me, Indiana was the way to go. Sorry, I'm kind of blabbering. I was doing a long night, but yeah, I just really thought Indiana was the way to go.
But Kentucky won their tournament. They won the SEC tournament.
I understand.
That means
they
actually finished second in the conference, or they might have tied in the conference, but since A&M beat them, they actually...
There's only two teams in that conference, though, Tommy. Who else is in that conference?
I don't know. LSU wasn't bad. They just played inconsistent.
True. I mean, if you want to count them, it's 2.5, maybe 3, but at that, that's all you're going to get in the SEC. That's why I didn't think that, you know, I get what you're saying, right? They won their tournament, and they were only second in their conference, but I feel... again, you have to look at the conference they play in and things of that nature for me. Again, it was a personal thing. I'm way on the outside on that, but I definitely felt like, you know, they got a lucky break being in that conference and winning that conference. So to me, it wasn't a team that I was expecting to go any further than 32.
You didn't feel like they could get past the second round. Interesting. I'm not going to lie. I had Kentucky in the Sweet 16. Even though I had them losing that next game after the Sweet 16, I did think that Coach Cal had it up his sleeve to at least get that far, respecting his gangster up until this point. But knowing what Tom Crean brings to the table, knowing his resume, and knowing that he coaches well up against Coach Cal, regardless of who he has on that roster or not, if it's DeBrow and Kid Gilchrist, Darius Miller, those guys that were part of that team, he ended up knocking that team off just a few years ago, and going up against Goliath again, even though they were right behind each other in the seedings and their portion of the bracket. I mean, Indiana stunned a lot of people, including myself, for them to not only win the game, but had, you know, Kentucky trying to play the foul game and knock down three to get back into the ball game. It says a lot of for them being prepared for this situation. In the brackets. Now, Tommy, I know that you alluded to the Miami Hurricanes up against Wichita State, in which they had a huge lead up against Wichita State, and Wichita State was fighting tooth and nail to get back into this game. Your thoughts on the Canes actually hanging on and Rodriguez being the guy for this team? He's looking like he could actually try and shoulder the load as much as possible for the Hurricanes.
You know, I'm just glad the good Rodriguez, Angel Rodriguez, shows up. And that bad Rodriguez, I hope he kicks it to Puerto Rico. And the good Rodriguez, because if the good Rodriguez is on the floor and Sheldon McClellan's on the floor, I mean, Sheldon McClellan, he's a beast. I'm sorry. If he's not a late first-round pick in the NBA draft, I'm done with the NBA because it's garbage. And Shaqiri down low can rebound. We can beat almost anybody if the good Rodriguez shows up. Because I'm telling you, I've said it all year, Ty. I've said it on here before the season started. Watch out for this team. This team is dangerous. It all depends on, and I've said it, and it's been since last year. And it's been this year, too. It all depends on what Angel Rodriguez shows up. If the bad Angel shows up, turning the ball over, taking bad shots, jacking up threes, we're in trouble. Now, that game yesterday, I actually thought, oh, cool, we started out good. We're blowing them off the floor. Damn. We're going to show up and play like we did earlier in the year when we won the Puerto Rico shootout. We're going to play 2 Fs. Wrong. We flipped the script. We played a good first half and had to hang on in the second half. Normally, we have a bad first half, keep it close, come out and play very good in the second half. And we flipped it. And it scared the hell out of me. I was thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to have to hear from Ty. I'm waiting. And we pulled it out, and I'm thinking, thank God, I ain't got to hear from him. My phone's not going to blow up.
Look, and you know better than to say that on air. I don't go looking for people. You know that. I don't look for you. I don't look for you when North Carolina beat Miami. I don't do none of that. I don't listen. Everybody, you see them come for me. You see them come for me. Whether it's serious, natural, they come for me. I don't go for people. But they know. They know if they come in this kitchen, I'll have questions. I'll have questions. I'll do stuff like that. But I don't go looking for people because I know I'm going to keep it real. I'm worse than the both of you and everybody that comes in the kitchen. I'm the worst loser ever. I don't. If we were to play marbles, I'm trying to win. If we are playing blackjack or whatever, I ain't trying to lose. I can't admit to be like, oh, well, they were the better team. No, listen, I did something wrong. But nevertheless, Miami they were able to take care of business up against the Shockers. And it's actually sad to see Wichita State go because they are an interesting team year in and year out. I respect Coach Marshall, what he's able to provide out of that team. A guy, Ron Baker as well, one of their high-energy guards who's been there every bit of the way for the past 4 years, getting to the postseason with this team as well, keeping them relevant. I just want to see if Wichita State has the end-all to bring it back next season while they lose two of their bigger pieces in this upcoming 2016-2017 season. Nasser, your thoughts on the Shockers trying to shock the Hurricanes, but they ended up falling short.
Again, this is another part of my bracket that I wish to forget. I definitely did not have...
Listen to me, Nacho. All you do is listen to me. I've said it all year. Watch out for these games.
I definitely did not have the Shockers winning in the first round, nor did I have Miami. And for a minute there in that Miami game, like Tommy said, if they didn't make those late free throws and pull it out there in crunch time, I was looking pretty right on that one. Chandler and I think both picked Buffalo or said Buffalo would have a great shot at beating Miami. Again, I didn't think... the Wildcats were going to get bounced around one, but, it is what it is. So the Shockers did what they were supposed to do, and they came through. It was an upset that a lot of people actually called, and I just didn't see it. So for them to go through and beat Arizona and then take on a Miami team and lose to them, I didn't expect them to even get that far. But like you said, they could have been bracket busters, all the way up into Sweet 16. Maybe even the Elite Eight. It could have been something that they could have done, breaking everyone's brackets like the other teams did. But I just, like you said, it's again, no pun intended. It's not the greatest shocker in the tournament so far. But it would have been nice to see them, hang on and win one, or like I said, break a couple brackets later on in the Elite Eight or maybe the Sweet 16. So I just really didn't feel Miami was going to be able to do that, but they did. And Wichita State just being able to take on an Arizona team and dominate them pretty much the entirety of the game. I thought maybe they could do that to the Miami team, but it just didn't work out that way. It's a great experience, obviously, for Wichita. Again, they do this almost every year. It seems like they come in and they beat a team they're not supposed to, and then they beat another team, and now we're at the Elite Eight looking at a Wichita State team. I know it's not every year, but it kind of almost feels like that. But, just some great games that they played, and they weren't able to hang on, but they weren't, embarrassed or ran off the court, which is, Ty and I aren't really one for moral victories of that nature, but at least you weren't totally decimated round one and embarrassed off the court like some teams were.
Okay, now I do want to ask you two a question. I do want to spill into that Wichita State Arizona, but like Nacho said, I don't come looking for people. I let Nacho live. You see what I'm saying? When the Wildcats went down, I let people rock, man. I don't do that, but I could have, but I could ask some questions. But now, looking at the game that we have today, do you see any possible Cinderellas or shocks of the day that people need to be aware of? I can give you all of the games, or if you guys do have your brackets in front of you, to think of a matchup that you guys are watching closely. Is it Stephen F. Austin? Could these guys actually give Notre Dame a problem, because Notre Dame playing up against Michigan the other day, Michigan had a hell of a lead on them going into the half. They were up 12 on Notre Dame and ended up losing to Notre Dame by 7. So somewhere in the portion of the game, they watched 19 points get shredded on them, and Michigan, you know, fell apart or fell short in losing the moxie of what the situation was. But is there any game as of today that we need to be watching closely? I'll give the games. Maryland, Hawaii, you also
that one,
have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hawaii is a good ball club that no one got to see because they're way out in Hawaii. I've actually got Hawaii in the, I believe, the Elite Eight. I've got to look at the bracket because it's in the other upstairs in the room. But I believe I have Hawaii in the Elite Eight. Because you got to think about it. This is the last year, because next year these boys aren't eligible for the tournament. They self-oppose themselves. Watch for Hawaii. I don't trust Maryland. Maryland survived their game they won before. Was it Friday? They survived. Hawaii, Middle Tennessee over Syracuse. Let's see. What else is there? That St. Joe's and Oregon game is interesting, too.
I think when it comes to the Maryland-Hawaii game, that you look at round one and you want to just sit there and go, wow, South Dakota State only got, you know, they only squeaked out with a 5-point loss. Well, Hawaii dominated a 4-seed in Cal. You know, to me, it almost feels like a no-brainer. Again, I was against Maryland from round one. You know, I believed the hype the first few weeks of the season, but after watching them the entirety, I didn't feel that they were that good, you know, to make it far in the tournament. But the Hawaii, like I said, Hawaii being able to dominate that number four in Cal, and Cal not being, you know, they're not the greatest things to slice bread, but they're no pushover in them, of themselves. And then, of course, you know, it is unexpected, especially for a team like Hawaii, who, you know, is, what is it, 3-4 hours off, you know, in another time zone, where you're never going to get to see them in the contiguous, you know, United States, the 48 states over here. So it just, it does a disservice to them that we won't get to see them during the regular season. But again, in the tournament, they get to show it. I know they have the self-imposed next year. So again, this might be a team that is all hands on deck, all cylinders running, and let's make something happen because we're not going to be able to do anything next year. So I think that game is the one that I feel is going to be the upset of the day. But a game to watch for, and they're not 6-4 teams, but the 2-7 matchup of Xavier and Wisconsin is a game that I'm going to be interested in. Again, just the numerical value that they put Wisconsin at 7 and Xavier at 2, you know, it could be an upset in the making, and I think that's another game to keep an eye out on.
Okay, I'm going to throw mines out there, and you know, you guys can feed off of that if you like. This game scares me. This game scares me. I'm going to throw this one out here first. VCU Oklahoma scares me. Scares me a lot. VCU has been here before, even though Coach Shaka Smart is the coach of Texas now. But this school knows what it takes to get to a Sweet 16. I think that aura is still there, and this is what scares me about Oklahoma. If Buddy Hield is off, if he's not hitting shots or has an impact in the game, if Buddy Hield is going at it with his teammates, and I think he's only done that once or twice on the sideline where they've got into it, even though I feel like Oklahoma should be able to take care of business up against VCU, I think VCU could end up shocking the world in this matchup right here. That's a game to watch also. Another one that I'm watching close to, Stephen F. Austin. I can't even look at them as a 14 seed. I can't. They played West Virginia and was more physical than West Virginia. I want you guys to think about this now. West Virginia is a team that loves to be in the paint, getting physical, get rebounds, but also shoot the three ball well. Now, they had a team that had bigs that could go in there and bang, collide on the boards as well, and can score right along with West Virginia. West Virginia, they held West Virginia under 60 points, people. They held West Virginia under 60 points. I don't know a team that's done that all season. Up against West Virginia. So,
Virginia.
Stephen F. Austin. okay, one team out of the other 30 that they played, you got one
an
game.
ACC but, school.
Out of that one team out of the other 30 games, they probably scored over 30. I mean 60, not over 30, not over 30, but they scored over 60. And Virginia's been notable for playing good defense. Virginia's been notable for playing good defense. Now, the reason why I throw Stephen F. Austin out there, Notre Dame was down 12 at the half to Michigan. They had to probably get screamed at real bad by Mike Bray. I think Mike Bray went in there and probably broke a clipboard or punched the chalkboard and split it in half because Notre Dame came out firing. But if that's what it's going to take for them to, like Tommy said, to survive, I don't know. I think Stephen F. Austin could be in a potential situation to get to a Sweet 16, at least that's what I'm looking at. So that's another game that could stun me, especially with them being a 14 seed. They don't even play like a 14 seed to me, the way that they came out the gate playing. The Hawaii-Maryland game, I really feel like Maryland's going to get there. I really do. I feel like Maryland has got through everything that they've gone through in this season. I think South Dakota State was playing off of sure adrenaline. I think they could take care of Hawaii. If Hawaii knocks them off, yeah, I'm stunned. Call me. I probably won't answer. I'll be stunned. I'll probably have both of my hands on my head or something again. But this is the great part of March that we all are ready for. I mean, there's some good games that you got to watch as of today. Wisconsin and Xavier, I think that's going to be a good one. Syracuse, Middle Tennessee State, I really don't know, man. Like, it depends on what Middle Tennessee State shows up. And this is what kills me about teams that are, you know, the ones that aren't on the radar on a day-by-day basis. If they start losing, they get down by like 7 or 8 points, do they have the moxie to get back in this game? Do they have the end all to get on the run and ride that wave as much as possible to actually take a lead? Not to get back in the game, but also getting past tying the scores, but taking a lead and being comfortable in a timeout and to build off of it. This is the one thing that I question because I know Jim Boeheim has been coaching since the 70s. He's going to be ready. His team wasn't supposed to be here, and a lot of people around the country have been screaming for Syracuse's head. So that's another one to look at. And the Oregon-St. Joe's game, I mean, St. Joe stunned me. I had Cincinnati winning that game, but I thought Cincinnati would end up losing the next matchup up against Oregon. So it's kind of a, you know, how these guys, you know, transport each other, be it Cincinnati or St. Joe's. St. Joe's goes there. If they can knock off Oregon, then that part of the Western, well, at least going into the Sweet 16 is shot for my bracket because I had Duke and Oregon going at it. I'm not going to talk too much about how the rest of my bracket goes, but this is bracketology here in the kitchen, and I must say, I'm shaking my head right now as I'm talking. As I'm talking, my head is shaking, and this has been great basketball out of the gate. A lot of people question the committee on how they put teams in. And I questioned them, too. I questioned them, too, on some of the teams that they got in here. But how they had it matched up, I mean, my jaw, I'm still picking my jaw up off the floor for a couple of these matchups where these teams came up with big wins. Anything else before we get away from it?
The Stephen F. Austin, I mean, I had West Virginia, but I wasn't shocked. Living in the Virginia area that I live in, there's a lot of Mountaineer fans right here and being – my whole family, a Mountaineer fan, but me. I'm the only one with common sense. But it doesn't surprise me because West Virginia, if you don't turn the ball over, if they can't get the turnover and get the layups, they're not a very good shoot half court team. I've said it all year. I mean, the Oklahoma game. Oklahoma should win, but like you said, it all depends on what Spandler shows up, what Buddy Hill shows up. I mean, can they get pressure on him? Can he hit shots? I mean, today's going to be very interesting. And the game that's being played now, the Iowa and Villanova game, this one could be interesting. I mean, I'm really watching this one today because the winner of this plays my Canes.
Nacho, anything left before we get away from it? Did we lose Nacho? Okay, you may be having a little technical difficulty. Well, we are at the tail end of the show, people, and I need plugs and closeouts from each of you. Like Tommy said, we got dishes to deal with outside of this kitchen, especially here in front of the tournament. I at least want to catch some of these games, and I got to run also because my alma mater high school is in the state championship. So I'm running to the game, which takes place in 2.5 hours. But where it's taking place at is an hour and a half ride, so I got to get going. But, Tommy, I need a plug,
so
close out, shout out. Basically. No, because you know it's going to be hell. Is that the Mohegan Sun Casino out here where all the boxing events and stuff happen? So I know my city going to show out, like my whole city going up there. So it's going to be crazy. And plus all of the gamblers, too. So everybody, I know everybody's going to be in there. But I know I want to get good parking, get a good seat. I don't want to be sitting in the rafters, you know what I'm saying? So I want to sit where I can see the girls and you know, do what we do at the game. But because it's the women's basketball team, and they've never – the Stanford women's basketball team has never won a state championship. So, and one of the girls on the team, she's averaging – listen to this. She's averaging 29 a game, so I have to see this. I haven't seen her play yet, but I've been hearing the paper talk about this girl. She's putting up 29 a game, and I think in her last game she put up 41. So I'm like, okay. Okay, you got me. It's my school, so I got to go. But I need a plug, close out, shout out. Tommy, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut it down here at the brunch?
Yeah, we were talking about the Indiana-Kentucky game and all. It's funny how beginning of the year, Indiana and all the fan base and everything wanted to fire the head coach, Cream. They wanted him out. Now they were sitting there. I don't know if y'all heard the story. The I think it's his oldest daughter, might be his middle daughter. He literally goes to Indiana, and the one professor that she has made fun of her because of her father. Yeah, I bet you now he's kissing her ass and bending over and kissing his ass. This is why I can't stand fan base that holler and yell about firing coaches. Let the season play out. Now, it's different when it's Miami and Al Golden, because that sorry son of a bitch ain't do shit for the University of Florida.
She's about to say that.
That's different because that sorry son of a bitch didn't do shit for the University of Florida back 5 years. But
I was just about to say that. Wow.
Tom Crean is one hell of a coach, and I bet you right now, school in Wisconsin where he came from, Marquette. I bet you they wish they still had him.
I know, but now they have they got Wojo up there now. That's the coach in Marquette right now. They got Wojciechowski, the former guard from Duke, up there with Marquette. But nevertheless, especially the success that he's had since he's left there, leaving Marquette. And me personally, I was like, he left Marquette because Dwayne Wade ain't there. That's what I would always say. I said, once Dwayne Wade left, he didn't see talent like that no more. He walked out of the door. But no, that was just a question I had. So, but. Nevertheless, I hear you. Al Golden situation. I'm one that was screaming for a coach as well, and John Thompson III. I said it before the show started. There's nothing else I can see with that Princeton offense. It's done to me. It's done. Nacho, I need a plug, close out, shout out as we shut it down here at the brunch.
At Nacho in the Box, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It was a great show. Everything everything that it could be. The Villanova game in Iowa, the last time Iowa made a Sweet 16, you had to write the year with a one on it. Once you realize how long it's been for Iowa, it kind of makes you want them to win or make something happen. But other than that, man, it was a great show. everything that goes on. And I know tomorrow we're definitely going to be talking a little baseball and the White Sox and Adam Roach. So I'm definitely going to be excited to talk about that and get into some of that in the political or whatever eye of that. Other than that, man, I can't wait for the sports wrap-up tomorrow and get to talking about some of this free agency and a bunch of other stuff. And, you know, good luck to the Stanford women's basketball team and Ty going out there. We got to get you some, a badge or something, some clearance, because even if you're late, an alumni like Ty should be able to get courtside seats even if he shows up in the second quarter. So we've got to fix something out for you so you don't got to worry about being on time or trying to rush away. So I will figure something out for you, Ty. Other than that, man, it was a great show. Thanks, Ty. Thanks, Tommy. And, again, wrap up tomorrow. I'm excited for that.
Okay. First and foremost, I'm going to tell you like this. I'm a regular in that damn casino, so I may get stopped by a couple of pit bosses. So I know the conversation may carry. Two is the Mohegan Sun. Three, I already know the city coming, so I know I better get there before a lot of them get there because it's gonna be packed. That's where the Connecticut Sun plays, the professional basketball team in the WNBA. And I've only been in that arena during the concert. I haven't seen it during the basketball game because it was WNBA, and I don't really, you know, I follow WNBA. But I don't, you know, I don't rock with it like that, but I know girls in the sport. So that's another thing, too. And one thing that you said, you know what, Sports City, I'm going to get this baseball show started soon because I already know Tommy wanted to do a baseball show. Nacho talking about it as well. So we're going to get this baseball show on the road. We got at least, a week before we really got to worry about opening day in baseball. So I definitely want to dig into that. And then LaRoche conversation, that definitely was heavy stuff that he threw out there upon his retirement. So we'll dig into that. I'll leave this dish wide open. For Mr. Silver, that's for sure. I'll let him come in here and eat tomorrow. That's what we're going to do, Sports City. I'll talk to him. Don't you worry. He didn't. And I'm supposed to get a reserved seat in the casino. I wish. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Thomas is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back. Rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning.
It's a Sports City Chef with Sunday the Brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy this everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark, the Moses, and TP Timeless.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours of facts. That's a fact, yeah.